Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Great to be here, Jim. Thank you for having me.
Do we have a special offer for our listeners?
Yes, we sure do. I try to offer that to House Street listeners. It's at VR Trader. That's Victor Robert, VRTrader.com. We offer 50% off on any of our numerous newsletters when you enter the promo code 2022 half off. So using 2022 half off, that's 2022 HALFOFF, just like it sounds. And you enter it in the promo code section, and any newsletter of any length, so we're happy to offer the discount. Also, I want to mention, since we're talking about VR Trader, that I'm not a financial advisor, nor do I provide financial advice, as a disclaimer.
Mark, is the banking crisis over? Have they fixed any of the problems that caused those banks to go under and have to be taken over?
No, I don't really think so. I mean, it's been an ongoing situation, you know, for a while, ever since the financial crisis back in 2008-9, you know, where Secretary Paulson is on his knees begging Nancy Pelosi to bail out the banks. And, you know, we still have problems with Deutsche Bank. And we know there's still stuff in Europe. I mean, there could be a lot of small banks that probably have problems that we're not hearing about yet. But, you know, they're trying to cover it over. You know, you don't have to worry, I think, about a J.P. Morgan or the bigger ones, because they sleep with the Federal Reserve. But, you know, it's been a problem forever because, you know, bottom line is speculation has run amok. You know, look at what Silicon Valley Bank in California did. I mean, you know, poor investment judgment. Can you imagine that's the only bank that did that? I mean, there's a bunch out there. I guess you don't have to worry about the big banks, but, you know, what concerns me is the credibility of the government here. You know, one day Janet Yellen is saying we're going to extend the insurance for all depositors, and then there's a backtrack, maybe not, then maybe we will. And, you know, as you know, well, it's not the case of Canada, but here in the U.S., I think deposits are insured up to $250,000. And, you know, whether that's going to be increased or not, you know, that would be needed, I suppose. But, you know, can the government guarantee all the banks? I mean, all they're doing is basically printing money, Jim. I mean, it's just insane. And, you know, there's a whole sector that says, well, if you're going to bail out banks and they have no risk, and they know they have no risk, they're going to make more speculative or continue to do speculative things. And, you know, how can the government continue to support, you know, the banking system? You know, it's you know, and we know the Fed just prints money anyway. I mean, the whole thing is, you know, a bubble about to blow, and it has been, you know, growing for years and years. You know, at what point does the printing press stop, or do they have to change the system or go to some digital currency, which probably would be the same thing? So, you know, and, you know, there's the whole other factor that supposedly, if you read the fine print, when you deposit money in the banks, you know, it's not really your money anymore. It's sort of a claim against the bank. So in theory, yeah, you could lose your money unless the government does bail you out. So, I don't know. I mean, this is just a function of a system that's dysfunctional. This is why cryptocurrency came into existence, because of distrust of the banking system and of the government. And this is why currencies have gone down in value over the years, ultimately disappearing in many instances. And even the British pound dropped significantly, and the U.S. dollar has lost 98% of its value since the Federal Reserve was created. So, you know, I guess you can't lose sleep over this. I mean, you know, you hope the government bails you out, but every time they do this, the value of the dollar goes lower and lower, and the value of your purchasing power goes lower and lower, and they just keep covering it up. So I guess the long-winded response to you is, you know, how long can they cover it up, keep bailing out people, and if it's not this crisis, is it the next one 5 or 10 years from now? So, you know, you have to protect yourself. You got to, you know, be in other things besides cash. You got to perhaps own real estate or precious metals or commodities and land and all kinds of goodies to try to keep you out of the banking system as much as you can. But I guess if at some point the system really collapses, you know, I guess nothing is safe anywhere. So we have to try to stay optimistic. But, you know, obviously the governments around the world, the central bankers, have been very poor custodians of their positions, and you know, Federal Reserve here in particular. You know, even others are calling for the abolishment of the Fed now, and the resignation of Jay Powell, and all this kind of stuff. I mean, we just know they're just not doing a good job. You know, the truth is, the free market should determine, you know, the course of the financial world, you know, in terms of interest rates, and not one central banker who, unfortunately, in both in Europe and here, have done a lot to screw things up. So anyway, I hope I answered your question. You know, hopefully, you know, your money is still safe because they'll bail you out. But the question is, how long can this continue?
And of course, no banking CEO has been held responsible for the failure. Now in England, they actually have a law that says if you're the CEO of a bank that goes under, you're responsible for it and there are consequences. No sign of that ever happening in Canada or the U.S., is there?
Apparently not. Apparently not. I don't know. It's it really is crazy. You know, in terms of money management and management of an institution like that, I mean, the Silicon Valley Bank, you know, bought long-term treasuries, you know, at the worst possible time when rates were really low. And then when rates went up, they got sort of wiped out when they have to sell those treasuries. Why would any smart manager, you know, commit to, you know, interest rates when they're 0% or 1% or some ridiculously low number anyway? I mean, there's no return there. I mean, you know, you park your money, I suppose, but, you know, it just, I don't have an answer for you. We just, you know, all I know, and I've been talking about this forever, there's always an outlier event. You know, is it COVID? Is it an asteroid? Is it the banking system? Is it the war? Is it a balloon flying over the U.S. and Canada? I mean, all this stuff, you just have to be prepared for it in the markets. I mean, and usually you have some warning for it. I mean, last fall, it looked like a market top, and we came down sharply, and now we've tried to recover, and then another, you know, so-called crisis unfolds, and that this is the volatility of the market. So I suppose that the, you know, governments, you know, U.S. government in particular, Canadian government, you know, continue to remain solvent in their own viewpoint, though they're really not. I mean, they printed more money than they'll ever be able to pay back, but then I suppose you just continue to invest and hold your breath.
Is there any way to protect yourself in times of volatility? I mean, you're a very nimble trader. You understand how the market works. For people like me who aren't educated in that field, how the hell do I keep my money safe?
Well, if you believe the government's still going to, Canadian government and the U.S. government are going to continue to exist despite all this, you know, and the currencies are still going to be here for a while. You just get into government securities like U.S. treasuries, which in theory would have zero risk and pay 4 or 5% interest. That's one way to go. Other thing is get it out of the system altogether. You know, if you own farmland or, you know, if you get invested in, you know, the mining business somehow, you know, whether you buy it through stocks or you get, you know, invested with some group that you feel safe with, and, or just own real estate and, you know, precious metals, I suppose, you know, things that are tangible. to try to, you know, get out of it. I mean, if you can own a piece of an oil well, you know, you know, friends that are in that business, and you can own a piece of that company and you believe in it, anything that's commodity related, agricultural related. I mean, look at China gobbling up farmland in the United States. Obviously, they see that as a decent investment. So I guess farmland would be it as well. The question is, if you're looking for cash flow against it, that could be a risk, because you could be tying up, you know, capital. When you're in precious metals, you're not getting a cash flow. If you're in farmland, unless you're producing something, you're not getting a cash flow. So you really don't have much choices. You have to sort of go to the existing system and buy, like, you know, zero, supposedly zero risk treasuries for the time being. And on the other hand, if you're bearish on the market, which I still am. I mean, I think we're in a period where we can get a rally perhaps, but, you know, you just get into inverse ETFs, you know, instead of buying the S&P or the Dow or the TSX, you know, on the long side, you take it, and there are available to you inverse in ETFs that just play the downside. So, you know, we do that all the time. So, you know, that's just another way to go. You know, there have been so many crises, even in my short life. It seems like we always pull out of it, you know, whether it's wars or, you know, banking crises, and, you know, they just keep inflating stuff. And the question is, how long can they continue to do it? So on that basis of trying to be optimistic, you know, you just stay with the markets until you can't be with them anymore. And I guess if the governments go down, your money is going to be zero anyway. So you might as well play the game, because you only don't have much choice. So that's really the issue. But yeah, being into physical assets to answer your question, and or if you don't like the markets, just taking an inverse position in the ETFs that are available to you. I sort of sense from what you're saying, if you just don't want any risk, you don't want to sleep at night, and you believe the government's still going to be there, you just get, you know, you buy government securities, you know, treasury bills or bonds, depending on your time frame. And I guess you can go to the banks too, the CDs they offer here in the U.S. and the equivalent in Canada, and they pay you, you know, 4 or 5% interest, and hopefully, they remain solvent, or the governments bail them out long enough that you, sleep at night.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. Mark, gold hitting the $2,000 mark. Does that show people are losing confidence in the banks and plan to put away their own secure supply, and gold would just be the handiest thing to do that with?
Yeah, I guess so. Sure. I mean, it's volatile, and we've talked about it. And the question is this going to be like a triple top, you know, where we don't really break through? I'm talking, of course, priced in U.S. dollars. You've been at new highs in Canadian dollars for quite some time. But in the meantime here, you know, priced in U.S. dollars, we got up to that 20, 60, 70 area a couple times. Then we got to little over 2,000 on this rally. But we really need to break out above these little triple tops, so to speak, and then maybe it's for real. And the question is, you know, the gold market is manipulated by the governments. You know, acquaintances of mine at GATA.org, Bill Murphy, have been documenting all kinds of evidence for the last couple of decades about government intervention and leasing and all kinds of, you know, commodity manipulation going on in the gold market, suppressing the price to make the government look better, and you have to really read all their research, but I'm convinced that's been going on. So, you know, I'm surprised it even goes up at all. I mean, the government, if they have that ability, according to the research that they've done for the last couple decades, you know, you would think the government always would continue to suppress gold by hitting the futures market with, you know, hitting the bids and trying to keep the futures market down, and maybe doing it through the, you know, through other methods just to make them look better. You know, a strong gold market, you know, shows, you know, lack of faith in the government and in the currency. So, you know, that all changes and they don't suppress it anymore. I mean, the sky is the limit. You know, I mean, gold probably should be 5 or 10,000 an ounce based on all the shenanigans that's been going on with printing and so forth in the last, you know, couple decades. So, you know, it's really a question of, you know, if you believe that they're able to you know, if they're not able to continue to suppress it, or they decide to change their mind about doing it. But, you know, you got China accumulating physical gold. We know Russia has been accumulating physical gold. And, you know, that's one of the reasons that you have to be optimistic to a certain degree, because these are two big adversaries to our system who don't want to use the dollar anymore. If they prevail and the dollar collapses, then, you know, gold's going to be the king of the hill, and they're going to control the metal. But the other thing to say is, despite, you know, any negative comment on my part about the government suppressing and so forth, I mean, you and I know, I mean, gold and silver and money have been around for thousands of years, and it's still something that, you know, if you put away long-term and you can live with the volatility, you know, because, you know, gold went, what, 2000? 60 down to about 1,000, and now back up to 2,000. So you got potentially 50% swings. You know, you take the long term view, and you figure, you know, currency is ultimately going to blow up. History will bail you out, because it survived thousands of years of wars and government change. So, but you know, if you're looking for, you know, make money day to day, and or look return on your money, you're going to have to trade it a little bit. You know, which is sort of what we do. You know, we try to trade the stuff, not just stick, you know, all your money in a coins in the safe deposit box and hope that's going to protect you, you know, in terms of your paying your bills and that kind of thing. I mean, over time, it's a hedge, and you just have to use it as such.
Mark, the U.S. dollar, is it on a slide downwards now? Is it under attack globally?
I don't know about being under. Well, yeah, I guess it is under attack, because we know everybody, not everybody, but we have, you know, Iran and Russia and China, you know, they're trying to do transactions away from the U.S. dollar. And this has been going on for a while. I don't think the dollar is going to go, you know, collapse so fast. But over time, I suppose it will. So, you know, if you have enough forces out there, I mean, you know, Russia and China are significant adversaries, and Iran joins. I mean, they just, you know, Russia had a meeting with Iran. I mean, you know, we got another access power out there, which is significant. And North Korea, who knows, they may join it as well. So can we fend all that off? And, you know, unfortunately, we have incompetent people running our governments who placate these people, both on the Canadian side and the U.S. side, who kowtow to China for one, and Iran, I suppose, secondly. I don't know about Russia as much. They all seem to be wanting to destroy Russia, but you know, they're all allies. We have problems, and if they're accumulating metals, and China's accumulating you know, farmland and accumulating property in Africa, and they're accumulating the metals, I mean, we have a sad future, you know, in terms of our ability to survive that you know, that force. You know, that's pretty formidable stuff. I mean, you know, you've got, you know, China in space now, you know, up there, you know, there's a whole other discussion we could have about, you know, space wars and other stuff that's coming. In fact, there was an article that just came out yesterday. I put in my, getting off a little bit on a tangent here, but, you know, I tend to do that a little bit. But, you know, basically the Pentagon is saying it's preparing for space warfare, as potential threats from China and Russia grow. Of course, I think there's more to that. I mean, the Space Force was created by Trump. And, you know, and of course, Ronald Reagan, you know, had Star Wars, you know, a couple decades ago. So, you know, whether it's, you know, the space warfare is a threat. It's a serious thing. And China's up there with their space station, and they're talking about, you know, setting up a facility on the moon and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, when these entities are accumulating gold and properties around the world, or trying to destroy the dollar, we have all issue that they could be in space and you know, destroy us militarily. So there's a lot of stuff going on out there. I mean, you know, you can, you know, be worried and say, well, you know, there's always something. You can be negative, but you gotta be realistic. So there's stuff coming, and you know, you just have to deal with it. It's like the COVID thing. How do you deal with it? I mean, you know, you're told what to do, whether you want to do it or not, and banks start going under, you know, and then you have to worry that your money is safe, and then you got these you know, there's always stuff. So, I mean, you know, there are those who are optimistic and say, and I don't want to disagree with them, you know, the market can climb a wall of worry, which is an expression I believe Joe Granville created back in the 1970s or 80s, you know, that despite everything, the market still seems to go up, and maybe that's just because the government just keeps supporting it by printing money and bailing out banks and whatever. But, you know, despite all that, you know, the market seemed to be holding up. So we just have to, you know, try to stay optimistic, take care of our health and families, and hope that the space war doesn't start, or the dollar doesn't go to zero, and Russia and China prevail. So, I mean, all these things are risks. So that's the markets.
Anything happening in crypto?
Well, yeah, Bitcoin's creeping up. You know, and Ethereum is creeping up, and you know, I'm positive. I mean, you know, I've mentioned this before. You know, Bitcoin dropped from 80,000 down to 15,000, and now it's around 28,000. And when it was 15, everybody thought it was going to go back to zero. So, I think it's going back to, well, it didn't get to 80. I think it got to the 60s. I think it is going to go to the 80s, but it may take a couple years. I mean, it's a real volatile market, up and down. It's treated as a commodity by the Securities and Exchange Commission here. So I don't think they can do much to try to regulate it. We know China tried to shut down Bitcoin, what, about a year or two ago, and then they reopened it again. And they was concerned that they were draining too much energy with their computers and trying to you know, fish for the cryptos, do the mining, as they call it. You know, the worse things get out there, Jim, you know, with banks and fear of currency and being into alternate investments as a whole, you know, group, and that's probably why it was created, why the cryptos are out there. I mean, governments could try to shut it down. Governments could try to shut down your ability to use cash, which they've been talking about forever. They don't like having people having cash because they can't track you. So they're threatening about creating a digital coin that all your cash is no longer legal, that you can only do business digitally on some digital coin, which is their dream, and whether they'll pull it off near term or not. So, you know, there's a lot of, you know, variables out here. We can only speculate, but the crypto definitely has been a source of safety, so to speak. You know, I mean, it's still being accepted as currency. I mean, there are companies and businesses and individuals that accept it for compensation. It's not like it's just a mythical, unused item. I mean, you can actually purchase stuff with Bitcoin all the time. And when I see things on the internet daily, I'm sure you do, you can pay cash or crypto for stuff. Not everything, but there are certain places you can do that. So if it's accepted as a currency, then it should be around.
Now on the geocosmic front, the Space Weather Center is telling us there's a second hole in the sun that's going to send a huge solar flare this way April 1st. Is that a concern to people who rely on satellites, which is all of us, if you have to do long-distance communication or financing?
I'm sure it is. I mean, I'm reading from spaceweather.com. They say it's called a minor stream of solar wind is heading to the Earth, expected to arrive April 1st, and they describe it as a gaseous material flowing from a relatively small hole in the sun's atmosphere now facing our planet. So auroras are likely to arrive. In fact, apparently auroras, which you see only, as you know, in the northern parts of the globe, apparently were seen over Oklahoma, according to this article, pretty far south. So I guess some of the solar wind is already reaching us. You know, the question is this going to be really big, or is it just going to be a display of some colors in the sky? I mean, is this a Carrington event from the 1860s or 1850s, or just, but yeah, that risk is out there. It's like, you know, look at the poor people in, you know, in Turkey with the earthquake out of the blue, or the volcanoes going off. I mean, it's another geocosmic event. We can sit here worrying about, you know, all these things happening to any of us at any time on the planet. So I know shortwave radio people have been reporting disruptions from the sun, you know, for the last year or two during a lot of these bursts. And at some point, we're going to get the big one. I mean, like the Carrington, where it's just going to wipe us out. I mean, it'll fry the planet. I mean, it could happen. So the sun's there. It's a reality. And, you know, that's just the way it is. You can sit here worrying about it. You just conduct your day-to-day and just hope that the sun doesn't go crazy and fry the Earth. That's about all it comes down to. But I don't know if this one's going to be of any significance other than a lot of the lores in the sky, some coming pretty far south from where they're usually seen. But yeah, I'm glad you bring it up because, you know, when I turn on financial television, you know, a lot of this discussion we have, most of it is not even covered. I mean, they don't even touch stuff like this, which could be a huge risk to, you know, the financial system and to the planet. And it's not even brought up. You know, they don't want to, you know, scare anybody or talk about stuff like this, you know. But they'll talk about, I guess, hurricanes and typhoons that are coming and things they can track second to second, but they won't get involved in this other stuff. So I'm not going to lose sleep over the solar wind coming, but, you know, we do track it. And if it hits us, there's not much we can do about it because there's no protection.
Mark, anything else we should be keeping a close eye on?
Well, just on a brief, you know, market comment, we really need to get into the markets, and a lot of people listening to the broadcast based on that. You know, I've been talking a while, you know, several months about, you know, looking for a potentially March low in the markets, you know, tied to that vernal equinox. And sure enough, you know, we're trying to come out of it here. My chart work and cyclical work and everything is telling me we got a solar eclipse this summer. You got the summer solstice coming up in June, and, you know, maybe we're going to rally here. You know, historically, if you check the charts and cycles, you tend to get a bounce out of some type of March low for about a month or so, and the intensity of that is in question, but it could happen based on cycles. And I've been sort of talking about, you know, look for some type of low in March, so we'll see how far all this goes. My gut feeling, if it goes up, it's not going to go up or stay up very long, but I think there's another big sell-off coming and tied to these other cycles in the next couple months or so. But we'll just have to monitor the stuff and see how the, you know, you see it in the charts as well as in the cycles. So that's pretty much what we're doing. And yeah, outside of that, you know, we got the presidential cycle, which is the big 4-year cycle, which is due sometime, I mentioned this last week, sometime between the fall and the first quarter of 2025. That tends to be a low point. So, you know, it's going to be up and down this year. You know, I think, you know, you get a rally here, then back down again. And whether it's in the summer or back into the fall, it's going to be volatile. But the least likely event that I see happening, you know, would be an explosion to new all-time highs across the board, you know, going right back to all the highs from last year. I don't see it. I mean, I guess, you know, if they start printing enough money or come out with another more false news about the state of employment and the state of the economies. And, you know, I guess if they somehow find peace in Ukraine and suddenly China decides they don't want to bother with Taiwan and Iran and Israel don't, you know, kill each other, you know, I mean, anything is possible in the markets, but that would be my least likely expected event to see an explosion to new highs real soon. So we'll stay on top of that as best we can, but I guess if you're mildly bullish here a little bit on the markets, the cycles are with you. So we'll see how it plays out.
Mark, thank you so much for chatting with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
My guest has been Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. If you have any questions for Mark or any of our other guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.